Welcome, everyone joining us here tonight on the Kings County Radio Club's Technical Question and Answer Net. I am Roy, AC2GS, and I will be your net control operator for this informal net. I will be your host, and Bob KD2NVB will be my co-host on this exploration from into amateur radio technology. The purpose of this net is to provide a platform for discussion and to offer our answers, as well as provide a conversation among all participants of this net. The club maintains an archive of these technical nets on its web pages, and we also offer original articles and reviews on many topics covered during these technical nets. We also publish technical puzzles for our participants to ponder and as a starting off point to discuss important technical concepts. Tonight's TechNet puzzle is posted on our club website. The link can be found on the front page of our website in orange colored type. But if you would like a simple URL to find it, you can just type into your browser puzzle.kc2rc.com. Also, we will be offering a streaming service for those who cannot receive our repeater signal. Just point your browser to stream.kc2rc.com. We also have an Echo Link node available for use. Just point your Echo Link application to node KC2RC-R. This net is scheduled for the second and fourth Wednesday of each and every month. All of this information can also be found on our club website, which is www.kc2rc.com. Members as well as non-members are welcome to participate, although we do appreciate it when our fellow hams join our club, and as always, an application is readily available on our club's website. No question is too simple, no question is dumb. All wisdom begins with the asking of questions. If you have a question, it deserves to be answered. Our format tonight will be to ask for participants to check in only if they have questions or comments for this net. Please give us your first name, your call sign, whether you have a question or a comment. The net will then address each question in order. I will try to provide a cogent answer, and Bob, KD2NVB, will join in as well. If any other listener has any further facts or opinions, they will be free to break in with the word comment, and when recognized, offer their knowledge or experiences to us all. If anyone has any suggestions for future topics of interest, please let us know either here on the Technical Net or use our email address, which is tech@kc2rc.com. And now I would like to introduce my co-host for this net, Bob KD2NVB. Good evening, Bob.
Good evening, Roy. Good evening, everybody out there. Looking forward to a nice net. Back to you, Roy.
Okay, very good. I hope we have a lively discussion tonight. Usually things start a little on the quiet side, especially these are the summer months where people are distracted and doing other things. But we will see what we will see. Once again, I am AC2GS, and my name is Roy, and this is the Kings County Radio Club Technical Net. So if there's anyone out there with any questions or any topics for discussion about technology, primarily amateur radio, but, you know, we chat about any kind of science and technology. So if you're out there and you got a question or a comment, please check in. Well, it seems that history once again is repeating itself. I assume the summer is going to be kind of slow in general. You know, this is the way that I've grown used to the technical net starting off. We'll ask a few more times. We'll see if we could wake someone up and get some kind of a conversation going. And if not, we'll just call it a short night. Once again, I'm AC2GS. This is the Kings County Radio Club Technical Net. And if there's anyone out there with any technical questions or topics of conversation, then please hit that push-to-talk button and ID yourself. Well, Bob, I don't know what to make of tonight. Maybe we should do what television companies did for many, many years and still do, just put the reruns on the summertime. You know, just the best of the technical net. They were considering doing that, I'm told, that when Dick passed away and they were not quite, they hadn't quite figured out what they were going to do. They were actually, some people considering rebroadcasting archived versions of the old TechNet from years before. It's probably not legal to do that because FCC doesn't really like amateur radio operators to broadcast, but that was one of the options. So anyway, let's see if there's anyone out there who has any questions or comments for tonight once again. This is AC2GS. Well, once again, the sounds of silence is all I hear. And I'm able to kind of peek into the Echolink connection, in which I find that I'm the only person on the Echolink connection. So no one's going to pop up from Echolink. Unfortunately, I have no way to detect if any radio receivers out in the local community are tuned in to the repeater. So it may be that we're just talking to each other, Bob.
A rerun, I guess you'd have to keep interjecting. This is a pre-recorded broadcast. Please do not call in. That's when someone would call in and try to ask a... Oh, boy. So that would have been interesting if they tried to... Well, I'm glad you were there. And you had already established yourself there, so I don't know why they would have thought about that for long with the case of Dick and the... LimarkNet. Well, but I didn't know whether you were willing to do that. It's part of it, probably. Anyway, back to you, Roy.
Well, surprisingly, I've drawn the conclusion that a lot of people in the executive committee don't really, they were very happy to have Dick there, and it was a prestigious thing. I mean, he won an ARRL award because of it, but I don't think they listened. So I'm not quite sure that they even knew what I did there. So at the very beginning, it was kind of like, I don't know if they thought they might not be able to talk me into it, or they thought that I was just some guy on the radio there. So I don't know. You know, one of these days I got to sit down with the executive board and kind of ask them what the story behind that was. But that would have been a god-awful idea, again, because it's not really legal. The FCC has given the ARRL News and the other amateur radio news facility special dispensation to be played during NETS. But even that, you know, without their dispensation, would probably not be legal. So you can't really broadcast much of anything on the amateur radio bands. You know, otherwise, I'm sure there would be guys who were playing, you know, FM zoos. They'd be playing sound effects. They'd be playing musical bits and pieces. And thankfully, we're spared that.
Yeah, and you could pull up a recording of Simon Garfunkel's The Sound of Silence every time no one comes on the net. Back to you.
Yeah, at one point I remember I pulled up a cricket sound effect because, you know, it doesn't really take up that much time. So, you know, I doubt that they would have been felt violated if I did one sound effect, but I never really got around to doing it. I had it loaded into the computer, so it would just be a matter of pushing a key, but I decided against it. Well, I don't know exactly what to do about tonight. We'll kind of drag this out a little bit longer, but if no one joins us, I think I'm going to call it a night early, but we'll see.
Give it at least till 9:15 or 9:20. Someone like William or Max or who knows, somebody else might come and surprise us.
Yeah, sure. I'm more than willing to give it a go. I mean, all the other times people wandered in late. I'll repeat something though that I said on Limark's Technical Net this past Sunday, just for the sake of if there's anyone actually out there listening. Then I discovered a new internet grift. I'm always looking for new grifts because they pretty much just keep on repeating the same old nonsense. You know, the Nigerian prince. Then there was this interesting thing that they did to death where they send you an email and they say, we've broken into your computer. We've commandeered your camera. We see what you do when you watch pornography. We've downloaded your contact list and we're going to send all those filthy videos to all of your friends unless you pay us in crypto coins. Yeah, I must have gotten at least 25 of those. Yeah, ever so. Some of them were complete copies of each other. Others were kind of degraded grammar. I always wondered why these spam nonsense emails tend to go to bad grammar, but I've been advised by clever people that it's sort of a technique to capture the ignorant. You don't really want anyone sophisticated caught initially on your hook, because very soon they'll just waste your time and walk away. You prefer the incredibly stupid. So they like to put in spelling errors and grammatical errors to kind of get rid of the guys who are a little too clever for the game. Anyway, this particular grift, let me drop for a sec. This particular grift, I got email from a place saying that they were the Chinese domain registrar, you know, all those .cns. They said that some other agency had requested my domain, but it ends in .cn, so I haven't registered it because I have no reason to register Chinese domains. But, you know, my domain with a .cn, and they wanted to make sure that they were affiliated with me, because it's unfair for someone to just take a domain away from someone. So I responded, just to figure out how this grift goes, that they weren't affiliated with me. This was followed by an email that supposedly came from the company that wanted to use my RS Laufer domain as a China domain. And they said that, you know, we don't care that you're using it and have been using it for 15 years. We want to use it, and we're going to. This was then followed by the original sender, who said he was a registrar, saying that they're terribly sorry, but the only way that I could make absolutely sure these guys didn't steal my domain was to purchase or rent on a yearly basis the Chinese domains from this registrar. So, you know, the next move was for me to ask them how much it would cost and then pay them money, and then this... God knows why this Chinese company would want something called RS Laufer as their domain. So it was most likely a grift, and it probably wasn't even the legitimate Chinese registrar. But it's always interesting to see new grifts pop up.
Yeah, I've gotten that one a couple times about the guy, the one claiming they filmed me watching and doing the appropriate actions of watching pornography. I've gotten that a couple times. But there's another one, I'm sure you've gotten this, when they say something like, your order is going to be delivered, something you didn't order, and it was like for several hundred dollars, and of course the way you were going to have to correct this mistake was to give them about a bunch of information or something. I'm sure you've gotten that one. Or, you've gotten those, right?
Yeah, not only have I gotten those in email, I've gotten those in phone calls. It was for a time very common for them to spoof places like Amazon or Microsoft, and you know, they would tell you that there's this large ticket item that apparently I bought that I didn't buy, and they wanted me to call them back to ask about whether I ordered a $200 a $2,000 watch or something. So yeah, they do a lot of that. I especially get a lot of emails that say that I've paid for an antivirus for, you know, $600 or something, and here's receipt of that. And if you have any questions, call the number. And of course, when you call the number, you're connected to some place in South Asia, and it's just a part of the intro to a major scam. Those I've seen loads of. This is the first time I've gotten a domain grift. I think it's a little bit less useful because there's far less people who have domains. You can't use it on little old people who are the biggest suckers. So I don't think this is going to be terribly successful, but, you know, people try things all the time.
Sure. I like to do it. If you get those phone calls, whatever kind of scam it is, I always just like to just put the phone number that it, when it says it comes, lately they don't even say they come from a phone number, they have some weird cryptic number code on top or something, but when they, or they say call a phone number, there's some phone number in there somehow often. I just put the phone number into Google and see what comes up. It's always kind of interesting.
Usually it's not their number. They're calling from some exchange in India or Pakistan, and they're spoofing. Sometimes what you do see is the machine that they use to spoof, they can't even be bothered to set it. So it has some cryptic setting left behind from, I guess, the original software. If they know what they're doing and they care, they set it for Microsoft Incorporated, Apple Incorporated, Amazon Incorporated. Sometimes they'll just have it set for Brooklyn, New York, whatever the location that you have. Sometimes they'll make up names. Sometimes they'll make up numbers. You know, there's a lot of variation, but it's incredibly easy to spoof caller ID. It was a very poorly thought out technology with no means to authenticate the signals it's sending. So you can send that you're coming from the White House, and most caller IDs will accept that without a problem.
Right. Well, but when I put these numbers in, what I'm looking for and what I usually find is just that they put that same number in a whole bunch of other copies of that same email, and you'll get somebody saying, it's a scammer, and somebody even saying they fell for it and this is what happened, it's just kind of interesting. And the, what was the other thing I was going to say? Oh, shit, I forgot now. Whoops, I cursed on the line. Anyway, yeah, so that's what I usually get.
Well, one of the scams that they use requires you to call them back. In that case, it's not a spoofed make-believe number. It's a internet phone number. So if they kind of say, you know, if you get an email and it says, thank you for purchasing the $600 package of antivirus software. If you need to ask us any questions, here's a phone number. So if you Google those phone numbers, you're going to get a lot of guys who said, yeah, I saw that, and I called them up, and this is what happened, and that's what happened. So in those cases, they are pseudo-legitimate numbers, although the area code is meaningless because it's an internet-based software-driven phone number. So it could have an area code of New Jersey and, again, be in Pakistan.
Right. And depending, no matter where it is, you know, they're going to just try to scam you for your credit card information or what have you, whatever they're looking for. And yeah, those are the numbers I'm really talking about. And then you get all these other people. You know, in the very, very early, semi-naive, I never was to the point where I actually fell for one of these things, but when I was actually thought there was some chance it was not a scam or something, I put it in there, and it was always like, scam, yeah, I got that too, blah, blah, blah. And lately it's more like, shortly after that, I just would put it in just for amusement sometimes. Sometimes I don't even bother. It's either usually a call or a text message, sometimes an email that I get with this, call this number or whatever.
At least once a week, I seem to get some iMessage on my cell phone that my package is being held up, and I have to click on a link in order to have it released and shipped to me. And I've never hit the link because, you know, my parents didn't bring up a stupid child, but at least once a week I get one of those. I send it back out to Apple as junky, message, spam, and I don't know if they do anything with it. I don't think there's much they can do with it, unfortunately.
Right. Yeah, I confess I rarely bother to report it. Maybe I should do it more often. Almost never do it. But, yeah, spam is one thing. I call spam just a bunch of unwanted advertising and that stuff. Spam or scam, of course. Anyway, back to you.
Yeah, it you know, it's unfortunate, but you know, it costs them nothing to do. They probably don't have a great return on it, but since it costs next to nothing to do, if they get a return of a tenth of a percent, it's a very profitable thing. I've seen a lot of YouTubes where they've actually captured the video, the office video of these places, and they watch these bastards try and steal money from frightened old people. You know, they tell them that they're gonna be arrested for tax evasion purposes unless they pay them off using using gift cards. I mean, how you convince someone that the IRS accepts gift cards? That's the problem, that they attack the feeble-minded, unfortunately. And some elderly people have lost thousands and thousands of dollars. I saw one YouTube where they convinced some poor woman to take cash out of her bank and put it, you know, put it in aluminum foil packets and pack that in a box and ship it down to some third parties, say in Florida. And they have these networks where people living in the country pick up the box and take a piece off the top and send the rest to the thieves and scoundrels in Pakistan. It's a shame. It's a shame. Once again, let me just throw out, because I see William is out there on Echolink now. This is AC2GS. Name is Roy, and this is the Kings County Radio Club Technical Net. And I'm sure William, when we give a little space, he'll come on and say hello. I'm curious, William, if my mic level is reasonably good for you tonight.
This is Alpha Charlie 2 Zulu Victor up in the hills of the Shenandoah Mountains. Checking in with you guys. The mic level's a little hot. I can hear you fine, but basically the red dot goes all the way to the end, and the yellow goes like halfway, and the green's a little below that. So it seems like it's nice and hot. I don't know how my signal is from here and what the delay is. But anyway, greetings, and I was listening to the whole thing about scams, and I didn't think I'd get the little red light to be able to turn the mic on or not. But it seems to work, so let's see if you guys actually heard me. Back to net control for a second.
We heard you, William.
Well, it takes about 10 seconds for the little red light to come on. So that's great that you guys gave me a break. So there was somebody else on Echolink, but they went away with it. I know they had two H's in their call sign, but I didn't get it. I was playing with the text. But So I had a technical question, and for you guys, I can't really stay on very long, but my question is, how far do you think the repeater actually can go if you have a good elevation? Do you think you can get as far as upstate New York or Maryland?
Well, no, I would be incredibly surprised unless there's something really strange going on, like some kind of tropospheric ducting, some thermal inversion that's causing a refractive duct, in the troposphere. You're not going to get that far. We're lucky to reach maybe the coast of New Jersey. That's about it. You know, Staten Island, Queens, Brooklyn, maybe the Bronx, and that's about it. Anything farther, you'd have to use some kind of very esoteric, temporal type of propagation technology like tropospheric ducting.
Yeah, Roy, thanks a lot for your explanation there. I thought that the limit was about, like, 30 miles, maybe that's even high, coast of New Jersey, I don't know, but it was interested, the sunspot thing, where this rust seems to have picked up on what you think is some new models, so to speak, for the sun. So that was interesting that Russ thinks this is going to happen, and he's like out on a limb with this. So I thought that was real interesting. And I liked your links. Thanks a lot for that.
One sec. Okay, yeah, no problem. Yeah, every so often it doesn't quite catch. By the way, the gentleman who came on and then left was KE2AHH. So that's him. I don't know what, Russ basically just read an article. He read an article and I guess he felt that that would be interesting to pass on. It is a new model. Most solar physicists don't use that model. That's why if you look at the NASA site, you look at the NOAA site, and you look at a whole bunch of other sites, they use the standard model that they've been using for about, I don't know, 15, 20 years. And that shows that the sunspot maximum is going to be in 2 years, not one. This is a shiny new one that's pretty much unproven and that most major agencies are not touching with a 10-foot pole unless it proves itself, then I guess they'll rethink it. So, you know, unfortunately, solar models are almost as useful as technical stock analysis, which is to say almost useless. They're very effective in hindsight. So you could make a model that explains why the last solar cycle was the way it was. But building one that tells you what the next one is, that's something that they don't quite have down too much. So I don't know. I've heard too many, the sky is falling, cry Chicken Little. And this just strikes me as another unfortunate example. I remember them saying all kinds of terrible things about this sunspot cycle because the last one was kind of biphasic. So they were saying that that we may miss one entirely, that we may not even have a sunspot activity this 11-year cycle. And I still remember this poor guy in New Jersey on a 10-meter net who told me he was getting too old for this, and if the next sunspot cycle wasn't going to show up, he was going to sell his gear and just do something else, you know, learn how to sew or knit or something. So, you know, this is just clickbait nonsense. And Russ, I guess, decided to fall for it. Or at least that's what it seems like to me.
AC2CV. Well, the thing that I thought was interesting and what will prove it is because the articles that this was linking to basically said that the blast was going to affect a lot of satellites in the sky. And one of the weird things was it said that the sun's magnetic field would collapse and that would force the Earth's magnetic field to collapse and then we would get more energy, but I thought it was like the opposite way around, is our magnetic field is constant and the sunspot blows so hard into our magnetic field that it pushes it out behind the Earth in a plume, and it had nothing to do with the sun's magnetic field. I'd never heard that the sun's magnetic field had anything to do with anything. So do actually sunspots affect the sun's magnetic field? It seems so small in comparison to the sun, so I doubt that analysis is correct.
Again, unfortunately, there's a surprising lack of understanding of how the sun works. There's a whole bunch of arguments being had of why the surface of the sun is a lot hotter. You know, above the surface of the sun is a lot hotter than the surface of the sun. It starts out at only a couple of thousand degrees Kelvin, which gives the black body radiation the temperature of sunlight. When people look at light bulbs and photography and they talk about light temperature, that's black body radiation. So it's only a matter of something like 3,000 degrees Kelvin, yet, you know, a mile above, it's millions of degrees. So there's something heating it up, and they think it's some kind of magnetic stricture that's occurring above the surface. So magnetic fields have a large effect on the sun and producing sunspots and all kinds of interesting interactions on the surface of the sun. But you know, that affects the sun. It doesn't really affect the Earth. You could have a gamma burst type of a situation that disrupts radio frequencies and satellites and such. It's not going to have that much effect on our magnetic field, because our magnetic field is intrinsic in the core of our planet. It's not going to really affect it. You know, there's another idea of how the magnetic core works in the planet, that it tends to flip every so often, something like, I don't know, 50,000, 100,000 years, it'll kind of go from north to south and south to north. And, you know, again, people are frightened that it's going to happen in 3 days. No one knows. Probably takes centuries to kind of totally flip to the other side. But then that's another problem, that if we have a weakened magnetic field, that lets a lot of ionized material into the atmosphere and puts us at risk for developing more cancers. So there's a lot of things we haven't figured out about the sun. And again, that was a kind of a clickbaity article, because it got into the possibility of solar flares being strong enough to knock out satellites, which it's possible, but not incredibly probable. We don't know the incidence of those. There was a minor version of that, I don't know, 10 years ago, the last solar cycle. The big one was back in the 1800s that fried telegraph poles. We haven't had anything, thankfully, like that since then. So more questions, not too many answers, but a lot of clickbait.
AC2ZV. Yeah, it seems like clickbait to me, but it's interesting. Russ is always a little bit on the front line of this stuff, so he's putting out warnings of hurricanes before they come, and now he's putting out warnings of, satellite sunspot activity before it comes. So he's like saying the maximum is now, and I don't know. Yeah, only time will prove who's right, I think.
Well, yeah, I mean, the way the letter kind of read was that the article suggests that rather than peaking in 2 years, it'll peak in 1 year. And Russ's letter was a caution to people that if they thought that they were going to sit around for that they had 2 years to sit around for the maximum to get their antennas up, that they should rethink that and put their antennas up earlier. But I think most people who aren't terribly procrastinators will put them up as soon as they can put them up, because, you know, 6 months ago, 10 meters was jumping all over the place. So you don't necessarily need to time your antenna installation to the sunspot maximum. You could do it for pre-maximum, like a lot of people did. And also, the curve of most sunspot activity is not symmetrical. It has a much more rapid rise and a slower fall off. So just because it would peak next year doesn't mean that a year later it would be dead. You know, it'll go down a little bit slower on the downward trend. But, you know, I don't know. I tend to doubt that Russ is a solar physicist, so he's just reading a dubious article that is a copy of another dubious article that apparently was a copy of another dubious article, because it looks like they cut and pasted everything from one to the other to the other, and cut away bits and pieces to have less space and such. So, I'm not impressed. Again, this model is, as far as I know, incredibly unproven. So, I would sooner listen to the authors of the model written in the article. I'd sooner listen to some guy who plucks feathers and by the way that they fall discerns the future.
Yeah, I tend to agree. I think that one of the things about these models is then once they get created, they start getting a track record of their accuracy. And it's like those hurricane models. you get, you know, 5 or 6 different tracts of which one is the most right, and then you choose the one which has been the most reliable and shoot the dice from there. So this provides just a second opinion to the 2-year cycle, and maybe the guy's going to get a little traction, and maybe that means something to him, you know, somehow, that his model is any good, and it might get accepted in the future and become, you know, a legitimate model. But so it's nice to know from you that it's just a test case more than an actual fact. And the fact that it then becomes quoted as an actual fact starts making me wonder about, you know, all the information I'm getting. And everything now seems to be a test case, not fact. I have to somehow prove it to myself, which seems impossible.
Well, you know, ultimately, it's always nice to trace these articles back because it gives you a little bit better sense of what's going on. You know, if I traced it back to an article in a prestigious journal, that would be one thing. But it's basically, you know, it gets more and more clickbaity with each generation, and it went through 3 generations. So, you know, it kind of makes the red light blink, you know, danger, danger. You know, models are very good. Models can be very useful, but you have to prove a model. You can't just propose a model and then treat it as though it's legitimate, because a lot of people have proposed a lot of models that were junk. Time will tell, you know, if he proves this run of Sunspot 25 very close, then I'll pay more attention to Sunspot 26 when it rolls around in his model. But, you know, so far, solar models are not terribly useful, even the old-time ones. I found a page someplace where they superimpose the sunspot activity predicted by the old model and the sunspot activity that was actually recorded in real time. And it was the real time was consistently higher intensity than the model predicted. So we're still in the early times. I mean, although we've counted 25 sunspot cycles historically, we've only had an opportunity to scientifically investigate maybe 5 or 6 of them. So, and, you know, with increasing technological prowess. So you always have to keep in mind what these predictions are based on. Sometimes they're based on more, sometimes they're based on less.
Yeah, AC2ZV, sure. I kind of am waiting to find out if the Starlink is going to survive and they're going to lose satellites. And it's going to be big news, and we'll find out what happens. Up here in Virginia, it turns out that most of the people up here don't like the HughesNet, which is what I'm operating on, which is in the HTS. And now the big thing is to get on Elon Musk's Starlink system, because it gives you 100 megabits, but it's only a 1-year waiting list to get on the list. And even my neighbor, who is hearing impaired and she's deaf, has got priority with being able to get on, you know, some kind of list. She gets a special treatment, but still, she's got 9 months to wait to find out if she's going to be able to get a connection. And even then, she's going to have to cut down about 5 trees. So she's not even sure it's going to work. So her problem is that she uses a video phone to communicate, and there's no bandwidth on the HughesNet satellite. It keeps stalling, so it makes conversations terrible. Anyway, I'm going to go back to my guests and stuff in a few minutes, so I'm going to listen in for you guys for a while, but I just wanted to check in and say hi from Virginia, and I'll be back with you in Brooklyn next week.
Very good, William. I thank you for checking in. I thank you for participating. As always, have fun, and we'll talk to you again down the line.
Yeah, Roy, I really think this EchoLink is really great, and we should really try to get maybe we can get more participation from, you know, people in the Brooklyn, New York area, you know, if we promote it somehow more and get the club members to sign in on EchoLink if they're not near their radios, because, you know, the system works really well, And it's all thanks to you and the other gentleman who donated his equipment. So anyway, I'm gonna sign off, and I want to thank you again for all the work you do for us and keeping this thing going, because I think it's a great link. The fact that I can be here over 300 miles away and talk to you like you're right next door.
Well, I'm glad to hear that, William. I try to promote it as best I can. I think it's a good asset. When you have more than one person on it, people have to kind of understand that it's a little different than the radio. You have to kind of, you can't quick key on the repeater, or otherwise you'll block the people from coming in on Echolink. And if one person if two people are trying to transmit on Echolink simultaneously, they're confused because no one seems to hear them, because they don't seem to know that they're doubling with each other there. So it requires a little bit of nuance, but after that, I think it's great. I'm a little confused, though. Who volunteered equipment for this? It's all mine.
I don't know. I'll have to go back and reread it. But somehow I thought I saw that somebody had donated some equipment to the club, which was able to be used to make the Echolink connection. So maybe I'm totally wrong with that. But I don't know. I read that at some place. I'll have to go back and now reread everything I've read in the last 10, 20 days and figure out where I got this lousy information, if you don't know it. Because I thought that I thought I saw a thank you somewhere for somebody donating some equipment, but you know, I could be wrong because I didn't take a real note of exact details. And my father always used to get on my case because he says, if you don't have exact details, it's bullshit. So maybe it's bullshit. Anyway, thank you for all your equipment that makes this run. We'll see what happens, and thank you very much, and have a great evening.
Well, AC2GS, by the way, thank you, William. I think you're conflating Echolink with WireZX. WireZX uses an FTM 400 that one of the gentlemen who was a member of our VE team donated to the club. So it's the WireZX setup that has the volunteered piece of equipment, not the Echolink. I just basically took a bunch of things and put them together in a very convoluted way and spent a month or two. And I remember trying to get someone to help by just either showing up on Echolink and showing up on the radio, and I couldn't get one person to do it. So I kind of did it all by myself.
Okay, well, I'm glad you cleared that up for me. I think that must be the same gear that Max is trying to fire up over at his place then?
Yep, that's exactly it. The thing, once he tests it and he's going to bring it over to you, so when you gaze upon that FTM 400 that's part of the WireZX setup, that's this other gentleman's donation to the club.
Well, we're really going to have to see how that works out. Because I'm not sure. I certainly can't do the install, and we would need somebody that's agile, wants to do it. And I got my buddy gave me an offset mount, which is basically a piece of steel with two brackets on either end that'll clamp on post, that he said we could use maybe to do an offset mount on the antenna I could put on one of my poles. But I got that far. And I know Max has got as far as he's got. Maybe we'll get this done before November.
Yeah, we'll see how it works out. I mean, it's not a high priority thing at this point. Unfortunately, the repeater's analog activity is not that active. We have the Columbia University Monday night. We have the Infonet Tuesday night. We have this TechNet the second and fourth Wednesday nights. And, you know, for the most part, you know, and we have the Aries for about, you know, 3 minutes Sunday night. So, we're getting along with analog. I'm not quite sure how much digital is going to add to the experience, But, you know, we have the equipment anyway, so eventually if we're able to set it up, great. So don't worry about it. If it'll happen, it'll happen. But, you know, no one's going to kind of expect you to do this. It's going to need other people to do the installation. You're just providing the location for us.
Yeah, thanks a lot for that. I think that the thing is that from the time I stop hearing you talk, it takes me 10 counts, which is roughly 10 seconds, before I'm allowed to transmit. And then it looks like by the time I stop talking, it takes another 3 or 4 counts, maybe 5, to be able to see that after I'm done talking, a little arrow that says it's transmitting goes away, and then you almost immediately respond. So I would think that a 15-second break should be sufficient as a net control operator to let somebody in EchoLink get a word in.
Yeah, that should work. It's just the net control operator just has to be somewhat mindful of people who quick key. When you're just talking on a repeater and everyone on EchoLink is using it to listen into the conversation, you don't have to be concerned that much, and you tend to fall back to bad habits and you quick key. But if you're hopefully expecting some interaction with the people on EchoLink, it's very difficult, especially when it's a heated conversation of a more than one person on the radio. If it's, you know, there's three people on the radio, then event, what tends to happen is the one of the other guys quick keys a response to the first guy, who then another guy does a quick response and quick keys, and the poor guy on EchoLink is just sitting there waiting for the 10-15 second pause. I mean, there was a time on LimeArk where the repeater got deaf to me here in Brooklyn, and I had to do it on via the EchoLink, but everyone in LimeArk is not really well trained for EchoLink. So basically everyone and their brother on the radio was quick keying over me and not letting me get on. So it's up to the net control operator, who preferably shouldn't be on EchoLink, to remind everyone not to quick key.
Yeah, I think that's a good plan. And when I do it, basically I try to get all the quick key guys in first as I'm doing the prologue and stuff, and then I call for a long pause. And I like the way Howie does it too, because he ends up just not responding, you know, waiting for about 2 or 3 check-ins before he accepts everyone. So I think everybody's got a different style, and it's interesting. You kind of, like you said, it takes like 5 years to learn really how to do it properly. Anyway, I'm going to probably go after this last transmission. I'm going to say 73. And thanks a lot. Have a great evening, both you and Bob. I know that you guys are online. So thanks a lot, you guys, and we'll see you back in Brooklyn.
Yes, indeed. 73. Have a good time out there, and I hope everything is hunky-dory with you. I am AC2GS. This is the Kings County Radio Club Technical Net. We're here on the second and fourth Wednesday of every month, starting at 9 p.m. We've been doing this, hopefully, 53 minutes. Is there anyone out there who hasn't checked in, who has either a question or a topic for tonight, and, you know, before we prematurely cut the cord on it? So if you're out there and you've had a question or a comment, please hit that push-to-talk button. Oh, well, Bob, it looks like we had a threesome. Which is better than a twosome, which is also certainly better than a monologue. I think maybe we should bank the TechNet puzzle for next time, when there's more than just you and me here.
Yeah, that sounds good. I think I know the answer to this one anyway, so I would let someone else answer it.
Okay, very good. Again, this is AC2GS, and we'll give it one last try. If there's anyone out there who has any questions or comments for this technical net tonight, or wants to say or has any closing comment before I do my closing spiel, then please hit that push to talk. Very well. This net has been brought to you by the Kings County Radio Club. Our club is an ARRL-affiliated club based in Brooklyn, New York. We meet on the first Wednesday of each month. Our next meeting will be August 2nd, which will be held by teleconference. Club members will be emailed the details of logging into the meeting. Non-members wishing to join a general meeting can email me, AC2GS, with some form of identification for the required link. Although our meetings informally begin at 7 p.m., our formal regular general meeting starts at 8 p.m. and continues anywhere from 9 p.m. to 10 p.m., depending upon the number of points that are covered. We have a weekly 2-meter club net on every Tuesday night at 9 p.m. on this repeater. This technical net meets on the second and fourth Wednesday of each month at 9 p.m. Another club, the Columbia University Amateur Radio Club, has a net on Monday at 9 p.m. if you're interested. We also sponsor a 10-meter net every Sunday morning at 11 a.m. on 28.380 megahertz upper sideband. We offer an audio stream of our KC2RC repeater on the internet, as well as a stream of our 10-meter net. Just type into your browser stream.kc2rc.com. Members as well as non-members are welcome to participate, although we do appreciate it when our fellow hams join our club, and as always, an application is readily available on our club's website. If you would like to contact the host of this technical net, simply address your email to tech@kc2rc.com. We maintain an active website at www.kingscountyradioclub.com or www.kc2rc.com, which offers archives of this technical net, amateur radio news, original articles, and technical forums. Please visit our website and participate. Our website hosting services are generously donated by the local Brooklyn-based web hosting company, Three Aliens Web Hosting, who we would like to thank. As the great philosopher Jimi Hendrix once said, knowledge speaks, but wisdom listens. So try to listen a bit more and talk a bit less. Well, it's time to roll this all up and shut it all down, but we'll be back July 26th, and you're all welcome to join us. Thanks to all the people that participated tonight, and especially my co-host, Bob, KD2NVB. Without you guys, I would just be talking to myself. So, this is Roy, AC2GS, going clear and getting the heck out of here. Stay safe, be well, and we'll talk again down the line. This is AC2GS clear.
This is KG2VEA. I didn't get a chance to check in. Sorry about that.
It's okay, Max.
Doing dishes and then got a call, and by the time I got back to it, you were already doing the closing. Do you have time for one short question?
We can do that, sure.
All right. This is, KG2VEA. Yesterday on my net, a gentleman asked if our net does ARRL radiogram, and I started reading about it, written message routed over a network of amateur radio operators, but I don't quite get to the purpose. Do you know what a radiogram is?
Yes, indeed I do. I happen to know the guy that runs the, I guess it's the New York City. They call the New York City relay branch is called the Big Apple Net System. It has a local repeater, which unfortunately I do not remember the call sign. But if you Google Big Apple network system, it'll probably come up. It is an old-fashioned telegram system, which I chided the guy running it that he is the only remaining buggy whip manufacturer in the metropolitan area. Theoretically, what happens in case of disaster, you contact, say, the Big Apple, one of the operators on the Big Apple network system. They write up a radiogram. They send it to a regional cluster, who then sends it to the other regional cluster, who then sends it to the local cluster, who then somehow delivers the message, either in person, never seen that happen, or by phone call. I had a phone call like that once, or they'd simply write up the radiogram, put it in an envelope, and mail it. I've always told these guys that, you know, they're nice guys, but, you know, if I had to depend on them in an emergency, then I'd bend over and kiss my backside goodbye. They mean well, but they're really not set up for any emergency, so they would be probably the first to fail. But it was designed 100-plus years ago. It's in the name of the amateur, the American Radio Relay League. That's where the relay comes in, because communications were a very short path, and so you needed to relay a message if you wanted it to reach farther than your city, you know, or town.
Very interesting. I was wondering about that. Probably would stay away from that, but it is good to know. He asked yesterday, I was like, oh, is this something we should be doing? That's interesting. So thanks for explaining that. I was quickly reading about it and couldn't quite get the point. But thanks for explaining.
Yeah, I mean, back in its day, it was something. You know, I mean, Western Union had, that was part of its job. They stopped doing it in the 80s because it was silly by the 80s. And, you know, in order to send a message only to have it put in an envelope and mailed to you, well, you know, you could just use the mail service by yourself. You don't have to go through a whole bunch of amateur radio operators. So, it's of a dubious value, I've always told these people. But still, I've received a few radio telegrams, the type of thing that says congratulations on getting your license, and, you know, perhaps once it was a happy birthday. It's just make busy messages. I've never seen an actual useful message being passed on that repeater. They meet every weekday and weekend at 8 p.m. To pass their traffic through the system.
Okay. Yeah, that makes sense. I actually got that card when I got a license. I think I got it from ARL or someone else like that. That was pretty cool. But yeah, I don't really see a lot of value. If in case of emergency, if you can reach somebody over the airways, you don't need to do the radiogram and But it was interesting enough. He just stumped me a little bit when he asked if we did that. I had to go look it up a little bit. But thank you for that explanation. I appreciate it. Not exactly a technical question, but I figured you would know the answer.
Yeah, no problem. I don't know if you'd call it a technical or you kind of just it's part of the service available. The ARRL continues to take it very seriously. I think they have determined that they need to kind of refresh it in some way. So they're writing some documentation on the subject, and they may or may not change aspects of it in the same way that they have changed the official observers. That's another thing that's been around for a long, long time that the ARRL wanted to modernize. So I think they're in the midst of modernizing the national traffic system, is what they call it. But yeah, it was most likely it was on the very top of it, it said ARRL radiogram, because it's a standard form that the ARRL publishes.
But I probably would stay away from that for now. Definitely not something the net needs to do. I thought it was something else, like a digital mode or something else like that. But thank you. That was very useful.
Well, you're welcome, Max. I would sooner take up manufacturing buggy whips personally.
No, that might be a very lucrative business, given how many buggies are still out there and how many people probably manufacture buggy whips. Probably not many. So maybe more useful than a radiogram.
Yep, I would agree with you.
Well, thank you for that explanation. I'm going to let you go and go have to do some more cleaning, unfortunately. But it was nice talking to you tonight. Have a good night.
Likewise, Max. Hope you have a good week, and we'll talk again down the line. I'm trying to think in my head. I guess the next possible time that we'll be talking is 2 weeks when I do this TechNet again. But you never know. You know, may hear from each other earlier. So I wish you well, and don't work too hard, and talk to you down the line.
73.
Yes, indeed. 73 to you, 73 to everyone listening. This is AC2GS once again, and I am clear.